football on Off the Ball.
The sense is, and this is such an odd thing to say of a team who are 5 points clear at the top of the league, but the sense is their heads have gone.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
So a chance now with less than 2 minutes to go. Kempers versus Shelton.
Mario Kempes, the star of Argentina's first World Cup triumph in 1978, scored a whopping 303 goals over the course of his career, which included spells at Valencia, Rosario Central, River Plate and Instituto. But what if his career had taken a different path and ended up at Spurs? Well, just years after helping his nation win their first World Cup, he nearly joined his fellow countrymen in Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa at the North London club. But why didn't the deal get over the line? Well, in episode 4 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors, Richie explains why the transfer didn't come to fruition for one of the best strikers in the world of the 70s and 80s. Find this week's episode in your OTB football podcast feed for free each and every Monday. You can also go back and listen to the other episodes in this series focusing on Michael Laudrup, Pelé and Ronaldo. Subscribe in your OTB football podcast feed now.
Here it comes, opportunity, O'Reilly!
The League of Ireland is back this Friday night on Off the Ball, whatever the weather.
Can you believe it?
A team of distinction and real big spenders, Derry City host Bohemians after their 4-goal haul last weekend.
An instant response.
Can City get off to a good start for a change, or will Bowes get that loving Whelan?
Back pass here, Colin Whelan has scored for Bohemians!
There's sure to be fireworks on Foyle side. Join us on Off the Ball this Friday from 7 p.m. on News Talk or the Goal Out app for live and exclusive commentary of Derry City versus Bohemians.
A beautiful finish!
League of Ireland on Off the Ball.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
A very good evening to you. You're welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball, only with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Fiona Hayes from 7:30, the Ireland team named for the Twickenham game on Saturday in the Six Nations. From 8 o'clock, we're going to be joined in studio by Orla Reardon and Barry Hennessy to talk about eating disorders in young men. Orla Reardon is the producer of a brilliant two-part documentary called Dying to Get Ripped, which you can listen to right now. It was broadcast on News Talk there before Christmas. And then Barry is going to come in and recount his own experiences from his early part of his hurling career. From 9 o'clock then, Dion Fanning is going to be in studio for the football show, where he's going to take a hatchet to Arsenal Football Club and the pathetic bottle jobs that they are, just to put words in his mouth. He is with us in studio right now as well. Dion, how are you doing?
Good, Owen. How are you?
Very well. Cameron Hill, hello. Very good evening.
Evening, folks.
Hey, Cameron.
Dion, you were in England this week.
I was.
Do you get a palpable sense of the nation quaking in its boots with this Irish comeback win that's about to happen on Saturday? Ireland about to right all the wrongs of the last 18 months?
I wasn't in rugby country.
Okay.
So
that's a shame.
It is a shame. So, but if you want me to, I'll just say yes, I did get that sense. Yeah, I'm sure that's what they were thinking when they looked a little bit apprehensive.
A lot of people don't realise that you were once upon a time on the rugby beat, and it brought you to the English home of rugby of Twickenham during the 2015 World Cup.
I was an accredited journalist for the Rugby World Cup in 2015.
I mean, that is the rugby beat as far as I'm concerned.
It is a rugby beat, but I wouldn't, like, there'd be rugby journalists listening to this going, he was not on the rugby beat. I was very much not on the beat. I was wherever the rugby journalists, I was just where they couldn't be.
Okay, you know, what does that mean?
So it was just like, you know, I went to England, Fiji, Twickenham.
Oh, okay.
So like all the Irish journalists were, you know, covering Ireland. I was like, we don't need you there. They're actually people who know what they're talking about. But I went to see Scotland, Japan and Gloucester. That was a good game. There was a week, the second Japanese game, they'd beaten South Africa just before that. So I was at the next game.
So you were on the English rugby beat for a game. You're on the Scottish rugby beat for a game. What's it like being ensconced in the middle of the England rugby journals?
It was fine. It was, I always always remember, just because Eddie Jones was head coach of Japan at the time, and I remember him coming in after that game in Scotland, and he was being very Eddie Jones like, and everyone loved Eddie Jones at that point, obviously. And the one of the English guys went, "It's just like a Stuart Lancaster press conference," because clearly they were getting tired of Lancaster at that point. So that gave you some read on where they were heading. But it was fine. I wouldn't say being around. There wasn't the same end of that whiff of sulfur around the English rugby journalists that you would have got when you're covering football tournaments.
You get the whiff of sulfur in Twickenham, though. Like it is, and we'll talk about this with Fiona at halftime, but it is a great theatre of rugby. It is a good experience.
No, it is. It was great. It's a great... I also saw the Rolling Stones there.
Okay, right. But was that more enjoyable?
It was. It was, actually.
And this is not peak Rolling Stones, I would venture. Or maybe
it wasn't.
It wasn't peak England.
I don't know how old you are, Dion.
It wasn't peak England either, to be fair.
Yeah. It wasn't peak Rolling Stones. No, it was pretty good. No, the England-Fiji game was quite good as well. But it is a good ground. I think that was the opening game in the World Cup for them, so the atmosphere was pretty good that day.
Conor Murray's writing about it in the Irish Times today. The first experience of a player going to Twickenham is a rather intimidating thing, and he talks about everything that happens around the ground as well as everything else, that it's just super corporate. Like you have like Land Rover shoved in your faces even as a player, like walking through all the different areas of Twickenham, and it is quite noticeable in terms of the way in which they build it up around the stadium, completely different to how we would have our setup here, or even how Cardiff is, where like the city is where you go for your pints beforehand, afterwards, whereas there's this little perimeter set up around England, and you just can't move for a bar or a kind of like a chip van or whatever the case may be. That the whole point is to get you into the confines of that area.
Stade de France is kind of like that, isn't it? There's a lot of bars around there as well, and it seems like it's a sort of an island separate from the rest of Paris, literally by the big motorway, the Périph. But I've never been. It's the one ground I still haven't done, Twickenham, in terms of the Six Nations ground. So probably need to do it. Maybe on a day where I feel Ireland might have a better chance than this weekend. But yeah.
But it'll be all the more sweeter if you were to be there this weekend, Cameron, and they were to do it. So expectations not exactly flying high, but we do have an Ireland team named, so you might bring us through the details for anybody that's missed this earlier.
Well, five changes from the team that beat Italy at the Aviva Stadium last weekend. The most noteworthy comes at out-half. Jack Crowley replaces Sam Prendergast, who drops out of the match day 23 altogether. So also not experiencing Twickenham for the first time is Sam Prendergast this weekend. Josh van der Fleer, Tadhg Byrne and Tadhg Furlong also return to the starting 15, while Kieran Frawley has made the bench and could make his first Six Nations appearance in almost 2 years. Head coach Andy Farrell feels the Leinster utility back is ready to make an impact at Twickenham.
He's been certainly frustrated, you know, with lack of game time, certainly in the autumn. But being able to give him the game there in the Ireland 15 obviously kept him ticking over. And for what we've seen in training, how sharp he is and how eager he is to get going, and the balance that he gives us on the bench, he'll be ready to go.
Some big men in the England back three. Did that kind of impact your selection at all around the high ball?
Well, it's an important part of the game, full stop, and everyone knows that it's an important part of England's game, and rightly so. They use it as a weapon, so we always have to cover all that, but more so we cover it what we want to impact the game with as well.
How have you been viewing the latest chapter in the Ireland out half drama?
Well, as you know, I like Sam Prendergast. I like the idea of what Farrell was trying to do with him, and I feel a bit sorry for him that he's. And I can see the logic why he's not in the squad at all now. But I think it's tough on him. I think he, like, obviously, I watched the game last week, and those missed conversions clearly. Whether they're, you know, it's this kind of chicken and egg, whether that start, you know, that was the reason his confidence was shot, or was that the thing that, you know,
shot the confidence.
But he, I still think he's like, you know, again, to my lay person's eye, he looks like, you know, a hugely talented player who can make things happen. And I think what Farrell it was looking for is a person who can overlook their weaknesses and emphasise their strengths. Now, the thing that I'm interested in, I like this idea now that that Ireland have to have, you know, two players for this position. We don't want to get fall into the trap of having one. Now, like, that seems to make sense to me, but at the same time, does that ever actually really materialise in practice that, you know, you're actually juggling between two out halves? It's usually most teams that are successful end up saying, right, this is our out half, don't they?
I do think that it is a big part of the inter-World Cup conversation, all right? That's, you know, everybody keeps saying, you know, look at South Africa going from out half to out half. I wonder if actually when we end up at the World Cup at the end of next year, will that conversation have subsided a little bit and all the big contenders in world rugby will actually just have their guy at out half?
Yeah, you definitely get that sense that France are going through that right now. I think they've started to realise that actually, oh, what were we thinking? Jalibert's the guy. He turns out, what's it called?
Entemac.
No, but Jalipon is
sorry.
Describing the halfback pairing at the moment, and it turns out it's the greatest thing that France have ever come up with. But like, you see him being nailed on as their 10, it looks like, I know you were talking to Stuart Barnes yesterday on Wednesday Night Rugby about whether George Ford is going to be the guy for England. It certainly seems like Steve Borthwick views him as the steady hand on the tiller. So yeah, eventually these things do come out in the wash and you get a guy who just surpasses everybody else. The problem with Ireland is for ages it was Sexton and no one was even close to him. So like someone was mentioning today that you could see the drop off in 2015 compared to Sexton and Madigan in that quarterfinal, which seems unfair to Ian Madigan, but you need someone who's kind of within touching distance as well. And I think that's probably more important than deciding when we rock up to the World Cup, God, we've two excellent out halves in equal measure here, and I'm not sure who to pick.
But there'll always be a drop off at some, like, unless, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you've got, like, the idea is that you have somebody so exceptional that there's just a drop off anyway. Like, you know, you don't want, like, a few all round averages. Like, you know, if you've got somebody like that's good as Sexton, then that's just a natural thing. And there was always this thing in other World Cup cycles with Ireland of, like, you know, we've got to bring in, you know, make sure who are the players, let's get everyone blooded. Like, you know, we got to have everyone ready. And it's like, well, that's true up to a point. But again, you know, the best players are the best players for a reason, and that's why you keep picking them. Like there aren't many rugby matches that Ireland are playing that they can say, certainly not in the Six Nations, where they can say, let's throw this away or let's pick people that we can. And I know we're not in that situation right now. We're trying to pick a team that actually wins it, but there are situations where there are very few situations where you can say, let's leave somebody out just to blood people.
Patrick has been in touch to say the Irish management team don't seem to know what their best 15 is. The team to play England looks like it was picked to satisfy the fans as opposed to players' form or experience. I don't know. I think there's a three consecutive week factor at play here as well with some of the decisions that might seem incongruous. Like, for example, Josh van der Vlier being thrown straight back into the team. I wonder if part of that decision to leave him out last week entirely was him going 3 weeks in a row. I don't know for sure. I know Andy Farrell said last week it's not rotation with regards to a number of the big decisions, but it has to be a factor. It's the first time they've had to play 3 weeks on the bounce in the Six Nations, so that might speak to kind of this facade of them not knowing what their best team is. However, sorry, I do completely agree with the point that it's impossible to know what the best Ireland 15 is at the moment because there are so many different positions where it's impossible to tell. 087-9180-180 is our WhatsApp number. What have you got next, Cameron?
We'll just go through the Scotland and Wales teams for Saturday's clash at the Principality Stadium. Blair Kinghorn and Duhan van der Merwe drafted in for the Scots after missing out on the opening two rounds, while Leicester Muir Gabriel Hamer-Webb will make his Wales debut in Cardiff at the weekend.
Okay, we will move on then to whatever you got next. Football, is it?
Yeah, there's a big night ahead for Celtic in the Europa League tonight. They play the first leg of their knockout playoff round clash against Stuttgart at Parkhead. Kickoff is at 8 o'clock, while Nottingham Forest are currently in action against Fenerbahce in Vitor Pereira's first match in charge. The latest score from that game is Fenerbahce 0, Nottingham Forest 3, I believe.
There is also playoff action then in the Conference League tonight.
Yeah, Crystal Palace are in action against Bosnian side Zrinjski Mostar. In fact, the Bosnians have just equalised in that game in the last few minutes. So 1-1, the latest score there, Ismaili Štar with the opener for Oliver Glasner's side in that one. Troy Parrott is also in action for AZ Alkmaar away to Noah in Armenia. They've gone 1-0 up the hosts, and that's how it stands so far. Here at home, Derry City have bolstered their goalkeeping options with the loan signing of Kilmarnock's Eddie Beach until the summer. The Candy Stripes look set to be without first choice shot stopper Brian Maher for a few weeks with a broken bone in his hand. Now, subject to international clearance, Beach could be available for the visit of Bohemians to the Brandywell tomorrow night in the SSE Airtricity Men's Premier Division. Teenager Shay Callister was between the sticks for their 2-2 draw at home to Dundalk last Friday, and boss Tiernan Lynch was impressed with how the youngster performed against the Lilywhites.
We knew that it was always going to be a big game for the kid. He only found out the day of the game that he was going to be involved. He loved every minute of the opportunity. He may be involved again this Friday, which I think he'd be better off after a game under his belt and playing in front of the Brandywell faithful, and now he knows what they expect and what it's all about. So yeah, he's a good keeper with a bright future.
We'll have full live and exclusive radio commentary of that game between Derry City and Bohemians on News Talk tomorrow night. Stephen Doyle will be joined by Candy Stripes legend Peter Hutton at the Ryan McBride Brandywell.
Now then, Lemer Senior's been out talking.
Yeah, and he believes any player or coach found guilty of racism should be banned from football. Real Madrid forward Vinicius Jr. alleged he was racially abused by Benfica's Gianluca Prestiani after his goal celebration during their Champions League tie on Tuesday. UEFA did say they were investigating the incident, with Prestiani facing a minimum 10-match ban if found guilty of the abuse. He denies the allegations. Rossignol offered a strong response to the incident when asked about it today.
I cannot speak about an incident where an investigation is ongoing. I won't speak about that incident. What I would say is, when you see a player upset, how Vinicius Jr. was upset, normally they're upset for a reason. I've been racially abused myself. I know people have been racially abused. And what people have to understand is, when you are judged for something that you should be proud of, it is the worst feeling you can ever possibly imagine. There are historical things to racism. I need to, as manager of this unbelievable football club, make my statement on it. If any player or any coach or any manager is ever found guilty of racism, they shouldn't be in the game. Shouldn't be in the game. It's as simple as that for me.
We'll have more on this on the football show after 9 o'clock, talking all things Vinicius and Jose Mourinho. Dee has been in touch on WhatsApp to talk about Arsenal. If Arsenal don't get over the line in the Premier League or win the Champions League, Arteta needs the boot. Has a massively talented squad and playing a style of football Tony Pulis would approve of. So, what do we think of this?
Well, I think if they don't win the league this year, I think Arteta is in big trouble. Probably doesn't help him with his mood right now as he tries to that knowledge. Not that I've said that, but just that general knowledge that could be that's the situation. Because I don't know. I think we might talk about this later, but just that sense of just tension and unbelievable kind of strain and anxiety around Arsenal at the moment really isn't helping them.
What are your thoughts on the style of play piece? Because that's been a big theme of the conversations over the last day or so, that the style of play needs to change, even though it's been the thing that's got them into a very strong position, which they're now, which they've now loosened their grip on considerably.
It's not going to change now. You mean someone thinks they should actually, they might change their style of play between now and the end of the season?
That's the reason why there are flaws in Arsenal's performances of late, is that of play is being found out.
Well, the style of play is, it's central to everything Arsenal do. So it's central to their strengths and it's central to their weaknesses. And it's central to, like, that really slow, methodical, taking the pace out of every situation, you know, every set piece, everything like that. That has a consequence as well. Like, it's great when it comes off, but they are an American football team. You know, they've got plays, they've got set plays, and they play them. And if they don't come off, then it's very hard then to say, right, improvise.
They scored 2 goals from open play last night.
Well, okay, well then, you know, I accept that, but you've countered well there. But in the main, in the main that this is what they base so much of it. And it's also that sense of taking time out of the game all the time. That's the thing they're always doing. Can they suddenly remove that and say, actually, now let's get the ball into play quicker. Let's move. I don't think they can do that. And I don't think they would want to do that at this stage, even though you might look at it. I would look at it and think, what the way they play it. I don't like the way they play, and they should do that. But I don't think at this stage Arteta is going to say, right, you know, let's turn into Kevin Keegan's Newcastle.
No. I've always kind of felt this season that there has been a relative sense of handbrake on. I mean, that's probably not the accurate way to describe it. It's just that's such an Arsenal phrase with you know, the old Wenger adage. But kind of the over-control has been a feature of Arsenal even at their best. And even some of their best performances recently have come in games where they've really tried to exert too much control, you could argue, at this point. Like, I think that the Sunderland and the Leeds wins recently, you know, they play the exact same way. And because they managed to get an early breakthrough, it becomes a very easy-looking game for Arsenal. However, when you're watching it live and you're not sure what the outcome of the game is going to be in the first 15, 20 minutes, you're not exactly inspired or excited about this potentially being a big win for the club. So it's a double-edged sword. And look, every team goes through this. Like, as you say there, the way a team plays is going to be the reason why they're good, and the way a team plays is also going to be the reason why they're bad. So I don't know. It'll be... Look, I think he is... I'd agree with you. I think he's in a spot of bother if they've won none of these trophies come the end of the season. But it would be fascinating, if they win nothing this season, to see what Arteta would change with a full pre-season.
Yeah, but I think he'd be under...
With another full pre-season, I should say.
But what would he be changing this time?
Because if that's you look, what I'd like
if,
to know.
Yeah, but if you look at the various... the arc of Arteta's time, he's gone through a lot of iterations of the team and how they've played, and... Is he going to move back towards something he had at the beginning? Is he going to say, actually, this control, which, and you know, it is with him about, everything is about that kind of control. So I don't know how he could actually move back to something more relaxed or more kind of carefree, having got to this position. I think he's more likely to kind of do some more of it, to actually take on more control, to say, right, this is what we have to do, we've just got to do it better.
Yeah, it does feel that 12 months ago the conversation was very much around Arsenal need to get a number 9, whereas this year the conversation is more on they're not actually playing well enough to get the best out of a number 9. Not that anybody's saying Victor Gyökeres or Gabriel Jesus are world-class centre-forwards at this stage either. Let's move on to the golf, Cameron. What have you got?
Well, Rory McIlroy is currently 2 under par early in his opening round at the PGA Tour's Genesis Invitational. That's just a shot off the lead, with Akshay Bhatia setting the pace on 3 under. Shane Lowry is 1 over through 4 holes. Play is suspended in Southern California right now due to rain, as the Albert Hammond song goes, when it rains in Southern California, it pours. So Leona Maguire, meanwhile, has made a strong start to the Honda LPGA Thailand. The Cavan golfer carded an opening round 67 to sit on 5 under and in a tie for 6th. That's just 2 shots off the current lead after day 1.
Now then, on to Gaelic games.
Conor Callaghan's been appointed captain of the Dublin Senior Footballers for 2026. The Coola clubman made his senior intercounty debut in 2016 and played his part in 6 All-Ireland triumphs. Nafina's Owen Merchant will serve as vice-captain for the Dubs this season. Meath defender Mary-Kate Lynch is joining AFLW side Sydney Swans ahead of this season. The 24-year-old has signed as an international rookie and joins the likes of Tanya Kennedy and Julie O'Sullivan on the Swans roster. She earned her 2nd All-Star at the end of last season and started at fullback in their All-Ireland final defeat to Dublin back in August.
Now then, we have some white smoke with regards to the future of Alex Dunn.
Well, he's reportedly signing for Alpine's F1 Academy. The Offaly man, who finished 5th in the Formula 2 standings last year, was released by McLaren last September. No official announcement has been made for the 20-year-old, who would be joining the Young Driver Programme and was seen driving in Alpine livery at F2's pre-season test in Barcelona.
Now then, will we finish up on the Winter Olympics?
Yeah, the United States and Canada are currently contesting the gold medal final in the women's ice hockey at Milano Cortina. Canada have taken a 1-0 lead in the 2nd period there. Kristen O'Neill with the goal for the Canadians. I don't know if you know much about Geraldine Heaney.
I don't.
She is from Lurgan in County Armagh, and she... she moved to Canada when she was 1 year old, became basically an ice hockey legend there, played in the Nagano Games in 1998, where they lost to the US in a kind of surprise defeat in the gold medal final, but came back and won the gold medal in 2002 against the US on US soil in Salt Lake City. I might be wrong, but I think she's the only Irish gold medalist at the Winter Games.
Right, okay. And so she's involved with the current Canadian...
She's in the International Hockey Hall of Fame. I think she might be involved in a coaching capacity with Canada this time round, but just thought with that game on today, I'd mention that.
Okay, there's a good bit of trivia. What's been catching your eye with regards to the Winter Games?
Curling, always. Curling. You know, well, you know, the
curling.
It's a traditional Winter Olympics fair of sitting around watching the curling with the family, going, "This is great. Can someone tell me what's happening?" Yes. Nobody can tell you what's happening, but you still watch it.
So you assume the status as of expert at that point?
Well, everyone, it's kind of competing experts. Everyone's putting in a view on what is actually...
What the rules might be.
And everyone's view is valid because nobody in that room, the room I was in last night or the night before last, had an answer.
What a tolerant, inclusive living room you were in.
Yeah, a bit of that, a bit of the big... There was a good big air or free ski or whatever it's called. You know that one?
Yeah. I think so. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Like, there's so the terminology.
Going backwards, saying a little slope up into the air.
Backwards.
Sometimes they go backwards. Up to them, I think, depending on what move they're going to do. They didn't all go backwards. Some of them went right down. Some of them went backwards, flipping around, doing like 720s.
No way.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
With skis rather than... I would consider that in a snowboard, but just the idea that that your two legs are going to go in very different directions would scare me.
The key verbal to make is ooh anytime something like that happens. Yeah. It just sounds like you're like a cognoscente, but you've said less is more there. And so he knows the stuff.
Yeah. Wow, amazing. So your favourite sport in the Winter Games is the curling?
But actually, I like ice hockey. I haven't seen much ice hockey, but ice hockey is the game actually.
Okay.
Because I understand what's going on.
Yeah, then it seems to take on a fair whack of cultural importance as well. Dion Fanning, we'll chat to you later on after 9 o'clock on the football show. Cameron Hill, thank you for tonight's news round. We'll take a quick break. We're talking rugby next.
The news round on Off the Ball.